Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to tell you that you can radically and permanently change your relationship to food without ever counting another calorie, fat gram, or carb. How? Because it's not what you're eating that is the real problem, it's what's eating at you. And if you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. So last week, I talked about how binging and using food for comfort or distraction is a response to pain. Because I often say that eating issues are a solution to the problem. A solution to the problem, not the problem, even though, of course, it sure feels like the problem. And, you know, the real problem is always the same for everyone. The real problem is some kind of pain. I often say, you know, that as human beings living on this planet, we will always have some kind of hurt, some kind of pain. And that is directly related to eating problems. Because pain can be huge and significant, like the loss of someone that we love, or when someone does something hurtful to us, like break up with us or fire us or something like that. Painful experiences like being marginalized in our society, that's also a kind of pain. Not feeling like you're living up to your potential is a kind of pain. To feel outcast, to feel unaccepted in our families, in our worlds, in some way, that's painful. So there are all kinds of painful experiences, but there is a difference between pain and suffering. Pain hurts. We all know it. But suffering is pain plus resistance. Or put another way, pain plus resistance equals suffering. The more you try to resist that pain, maybe by pretending it's not there, you know, oh, that didn't hurt me. Oh, it didn't bother me. Oh, that doesn't, I don't care about that. That doesn't worry me. I'm okay. I'm not weak. I don't feel that. Well, the more suffering you experience. There's a Buddhist saying that says when you get hurt, like by an arrow, that results in pain. But there is a second arrow, which is your reaction to the first arrow. That is suffering. So pain is an experience we all have, but suffering is how we relate to this experience. And both pain and suffering have a lot to do with eating problems. You know, it's painful, as I said, to experience rejection, loss, helplessness, other hurtful things that happen to us in life. But when we don't work through it, when we try to think it away, ignore it, push it down, drop it, stuff it, starve it away, positive think it away, you know, that pain doesn't go away. It actually turns into suffering. And then food temporarily relieves that pain and that suffering. And then it causes additional suffering, as you know. So it's a vicious cycle. But the good news is that when you identify that painful feeling, that painful situation, when you process it, when you work through it, when you deal with it, it goes away. And then you don't suffer. And then you don't use food to relieve the suffering because you've dealt with your pain in a new way. And that's why you have to feel to heal. So this is something I get a lot, and I've talked about it before on the show, but I'm going to talk about it again because I don't think you can hear it enough. So people who struggle with compulsive eating or binging, they often ask me why they eat when they're upset. I've had someone ask me why she couldn't be addicted to meth because at least she'd be skinny. She actually said that. Unbelievable. I was momentarily speechless. Other people say, well, why can't I just work out? Why can't I do crossword puzzles when I'm upset? Why can't I just, like, you know, take a walk and feel better? Why is it always donuts that I turn to for comfort, or ice cream, or whatever? So it's vital to understand why you're turning to food, not focusing on that you turn to food. And so understanding why food in the first place is really important. And keep in mind that our first experience of love and connection and relationship is being fed when we're newborns and babies. And if you watch a parent feeding a baby, you see this safe, warm connection, this loving bond between them, hopefully. Not always, but hopefully. You know, that baby's held and safe and warm, and there's eye contact, and it's all lovely and loving and wonderful, and that experience is connected with food. So for babies, food is love. Food is connection. Food is comfort. And ultimately, food and relationship are felt as one. And that's why in our psyches, we connect food not just with comfort, but with the idea of being comforted by another person. Babies grow up to be adults who naturally would have the wish to love and be loved. But if that love is not readily available, if that love is not consistent, if it's not there, it can be humiliating to want something that you can't have. It's painful to want something that you can't have or that you don't know how to get. And so often we turn away from wanting people and towards food instead. People are unreliable, unavailable, inconsistent. Food is consistent, available, and reliable. And that's why it's safer sometimes to turn to food instead of to people. We use the same language to describe both our relationships to people and food. We talk about fulfilling, satisfying relationships, right? The same language that we use for food, we use for people. And also, when you lack a fulfilling relationship, you can eat symbolically to fill up that empty space inside, to fill that emptiness and the loneliness. And even if someone is there, they may not respond the way that you want. They may not be the way you want them to be. They may disappoint you. They may hurt you. They may just not be there for you. I think the worst loneliness is the loneliness you have when you're with someone, when you're with people. That's the absolute worst. So, again, if you find it easier to turn to food than to people, you've got to deal with your conflict about people. I can't tell you how many times people have said that their family was home, or their roommate was there, and they just couldn't wait for that person to leave so that they could go into the kitchen and eat whatever they wanted to binge. They just wanted those people to be out of there so they could have their experience with food instead. But ultimately, this behavior with food is connected to ideas, thoughts, fears, perceptions about people. And when you have basic mistrust with other people instead of basic trust, you're going to turn to food for comfort instead of to people. But when you feel safe and secure, when people are reliable, then you're more likely to turn to a friend when you're upset instead of ice cream or something like that. Okay, so how do we get more comfortable with people? How do we do that? It's not enough to just say, oh, most people are nice. It's okay. That doesn't work. So I'm going to give you some tips from Dr. Rick Hansen. He's a psychologist, professor at UC Berkeley, and a best-selling author. And he talks about how we're often more uneasy or guarded around others than we truly need to be. And most importantly, he gives some tips on how to change. So he says, you know that fear. You know that fear. You step into a meeting with people you know, and yet you still feel this watchfulness, this restraint, this sort of carefulness while you're speaking that comes from something more than sort of reasonable anxiety about the situation. Maybe someone disagrees with you in this meeting, and you feel even more uneasy. You feel off balance. You feel unprotected. Maybe later on you go home and you're ruminating, you're going over the whole thing in your mind, and you start worrying. What did people think of you? How did they think about how you responded? Were you too pushy? Were you too irritated? Will they think that you're defensive? Will they think you're weird? Will they think you're too much? What should you do next time? it's all too scary, right? And then maybe, or maybe you get home and, oh, I'm going to hold that thought. I got a caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. My name is Jacqueline. I'm calling from Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, Jacqueline. Welcome. Welcome to the show from Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a question. When you were saying about how we expect people, that we want them to be the way that we want them to be, I'm just having a little conflict in my house, so I don't know how I'm going to solve this, and this is really driving me crazy, make me having a lot of bad food choices.
Okay, well, at least that you're understanding that whatever's going on in your house is leading to these bad food choices. So what's going on?
Yeah. Well, I live with my mom. I'm originally from Brazil, but my mom, she's living with me temporarily because I have twins. They're 3.5 years old, so she came over to help me to take care of them.
Oh.
And the thing is, my kids are loud, not obedient, and yeah. Well, I will just start a little bit from my story.
Jacqueline,
recently,
sorry to interrupt you.
Hello?
I'm here. I'm just going to say
okay.
For people who are watching on Instagram Live, because there's not a feed there, I'm just going to repeat a little bit so they know what's going on, that you mm-hmm. were originally from Brazil. You've got 3-year-old twins who are very unruly, mm-hmm. very, very wild as 3-year-olds can be, and your
yeah.
mom is living with you to help.
Exactly. Well, basically, I used to work full time, and then starting May, I decided to quit my job and go back to school, because I personally graduated in business administration, but I always hated it, so I decided to change my field and go back to kinesiology.
Okay.
But the thing is, at the moment where when I quit my job, like a month later, I just found out that my son, he has autism.
Oh.
And the funny, like how he was with me every day, and I always look at him in my own special way. I never noticed anything wrong with him. But then as soon as I found out, I feel like my life in the beginning, I felt like it was over. I started blaming myself. I wasn't doing very good in his studies. And then I found, of course, now that he got the diagnosis, he's going to start treatment. Apparently, it's mild. It's not anything bad. But the thing is, my house got very complicated lately, and I just don't know how to deal with that.
Okay,
my daughter, she's taking.
Let me just again, for those people who are on Instagram, they can't actually hear you. So I'm just going to say that you've changed careers. You're back in school. Your son was. What is this? One of the twins who was diagnosed with autism?
Yeah, I have a boy and a girl. It was a boy who was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this is very, very. Everything is unsettling. Everything is up in the air. You're in a different country than you were born in. Even if you've been there mm-hmm. a long time, you're not home.
Mm-hmm.
You become a mother. One of your kids mm-hmm. has autism. These are all things, and your mom is staying with you, which can be, even if you have a good relationship with your mom, when moms come to stay with their kids, it can bring up old patterns. But so everything's up
yeah.
in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. But the thing is, my course is very hard in school. It is. I'm studying a lot of anatomy. I'm studying a lot of things that I don't study since high school. So it's been very hard for me to catch up. And the thing is, my daughter now, she's very loud. She screams and asks for my attention. Like last night, for example, I was making my dinner, and she's like, mommy, 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 mommy. And then my son's screaming loud. My husband, he just comes home from work, and he just plays video game all the time. Doesn't clean up for himself.
So you've got three kids.
Doesn't fold his clothes.
So you've got three
Sorry?
Kids. You've got three kids. One of them
no,
is your husband.
No, yeah,
one of them is your husband, because he's acting like a teenage boy. So
exactly, and he knows that. And I've been, and then when I was making food for them, and then he's like, "Oh, why are you eating my chicken?" I'm like, "What am I supposed to cook for my kids then?" And then not just only my husband's a kid, my mom, she found a boyfriend. So she's acting like a teenager. So she comes home now, when she's home with them, she doesn't play with them. She just cleans the house. And at night, she just ignores my kids completely, spend all night on Instagram, checking videos on WhatsApp.
Okay,
so I feel like I'm overwhelmed.
You are overwhelmed.
You know what I mean?
Jacqueline, you are overwhelmed. And I'm going to repeat a little bit of your story for those on Instagram who would like to know what's going on. So you have the two twins. You have the son diagnosed with autism. Sometimes when one child receives a diagnosis like that, the other child can act out because they can sense that there's a lot of attention or focus on the child with the problem. You've got a husband who plays video games instead of acting like a father and a partner. And a mom who's got a boyfriend who's acting like a teenager. So it's like you got 2 3-year-olds and 2 teenagers. You're changing from business to kinesiology, and you are responsible for all of these people, and it is all too much. And so maybe you're turning to food for distraction, for comfort. Maybe you're getting mad at yourself for eating, when actually I say you're mad at your husband and your mom. I don't even know them, and I'm a little irritated with them. So
I started therapy before, and that was very important because she was always saying, you know, you have to stop with the victim syndrome, saying, oh, my life is not good because of your husband. Oh, always find responsibility to somebody else instead of you finding yourself. A willpower to change, right?
Yes, but that's blaming you. That's blaming you. I think it would be more helpful to investigate, why did you choose someone? So for you guys on Instagram, her therapist told her not to play the victim card. I'm saying it's much more helpful to say, well, I wonder why you chose someone like your husband who's not very helpful. You know, how is that familiar? Yeah. And rather than look at it like you're doing something wrong and stop whining, which is not helpful, Jacqueline, doesn't help. It's much better to say, okay, I made a choice in this husband who cannot and may not be able to change, but who won't help, who won't be a grown-up. Why did I do that? Why did I make that choice? And now, what can I do to change? Rather than accuse yourself of being a victim.
Yeah, because like what you say, like how I think I expect too much from want my husband to change, but I have that high expectation that he will help, and you know what I mean? He knows that. Sometimes he knows that he comes home and he just sit down and play video games. You know what I mean? It is complicated.
So,
and the thing is, this is affecting my studies because I feel like once I read, I don't feel like my brain is absorbing, doesn't memorize the things that I have to study because it's too much busy.
Right.
So
Jacqueline,
I want to know how to calm down that voice and try to be focused because I want to do great in school. But this loud voice in my house, you know, just driving thing.
Okay, then I have some advice for you. So she's asking for you guys on Instagram. She's saying, what do I do? I got 3-year-old screaming twins. I've got a mom who's got a boyfriend acting like a teenager. I've got a husband who's playing video games and not helping. What do I do? How do I deal with this situation without turning to food? So here's what you do. One is I would talk to your husband and say, look, you work all day, you come home. Why don't you play video games for this much time? And then, you know, I expect you to be a husband. And then say, I'm leaving. I'm going to the library to study. I'm going to be gone for this many hours. So you've probably heard the expression, you know, an empty vessel does not serve. Or when you fly and the flight attendants say, hey, parents, if the oxygen masks drop, do not put them on your kids. You got to put them on yourself first. If you don't give yourself oxygen, you're no good to anybody else. And so often women feel selfish if they do that. No, it's called self-care. It's called self-care. And so you what you need is some boundaries with your husband to say, I will be leaving at I will be gone for 2 hours or 2.5 hours or whatever you think. And do it. And then here's the important part. Don't just say it. Do it. So that he's it will force him to be a responsible person. or not. But either way, you're getting your time that you need.
Yeah. Sometimes I lost my hope because he knows what to do. But I feel like he has this, I don't know, maybe he's the type of guy that kind of freezes when he's confronted with this kind of situation. You know what I mean? He freezes, doesn't know what to do. But when I'm there, he has a lot of opinions like, he doesn't respect you because you don't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like everybody else around me saying, for example, if my daughter is doing something wrong, before I say something to my mom, tell your daughter not to do that. Tell this wrong. You know what I mean? So I feel like kids lost trust in me because everybody else is telling me what to do when I don't have time to say anything first.
Well, he also needs some help. So Instagram people, her husband, when she's trying to talk to the kids, he'll criticize what she's saying. So you, he's, instead of standing with you, he's sort of judging you. And and he needs to take a parental stance with you instead of like being on the sidelines and observing you. And something at least to talk with him about.
Mm-hmm.
But have some compassion for yourself, Jacqueline. And I know you called before, like many weeks ago, and I couldn't talk to you because I was having Skype issues. So I'm very glad you called back. But but you have a lot going on. You have compassion for yourself, and you need to set boundaries that work for you. And eventually, they're going to have to respect that those boundaries, and then you won't be eating your feelings. So give that a try. Compromise with your husband. Say, come play video games after work for 45 minutes, but then that's it.
Okay.
And just you decide what works for you. You decide when you're going to go to the library and study or the coffee shop or wherever you can get away from the screaming voices of your house.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do it.
Yeah.
And you'll call me back and let me know how it goes.
Yes, I will, definitely.
So you I feel for you, but I anyone who has the strength to have three-year-old twins and deal with what you're doing and take a risk to change from business to become a kinesiologist, you have strength and ability. You just have to take care of yourself to force other people. They've gotten lazy, right? They're getting used to you doing everything. So it's time for you to retrain them. Retrain them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, best of luck.
Okay.
Let me know how it goes.
Okay.
All right.
For sure.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I feel for her. My goodness. Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes people just won't change. They don't change. It's not... Here's another caller. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Nicole. How are you?
Hi, Nicole. Nice to hear from you. How are you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing well. I can't wait till every Wednesday so I can call and ask a question. So this week I've been dealing with some crazy cravings, and I was wondering if I heard that meditation is supposed to help with that, and I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on meditation as a way to cope with craving or any other mechanisms that can help.
That is such a great question. For those on Instagram who are not getting the feed so you can't hear my callers, Nicole is saying that she's dealing with some crazy cravings and wondered if meditation is a good way to deal with those cravings. And you will hear, if you Google, like, you know, eating issues, you will read, oh, meditation. No. Meditation is not a good idea, at least initially, to deal with cravings. Because a craving is about you trying to escape from something within you. Generally, we think we're craving ice cream or whatever because we're craving the thing that we're craving. But really, we want to resolve an emotion that we're having or a conflict that we're having, and we're using food as a way to get away from that internal conflict, whether we're aware of it or not. So meditation is all about being with yourself, which is the very thing that food takes you away from. If you can't be with yourself and talk to yourself in a kind way and respond to yourself in a good way, you can't meditate. You have to learn how to be with yourself first and then maybe meditate.
Okay. So what are some good, can you tell us some good techniques to deal with these cravings?
Well,
what should I do?
Yeah. Well, that's why I created my food mood formula. Basically, okay. You can get so good at turning to food, you don't even realize you're being triggered. And you really think it's about the food. So, for example, if you want ice cream or anything smooth and creamy, that's an indication that you need comfort. So if you are craving ice cream, that really means you're craving some kind of comfort. And you've got to find a way to give yourself that comfort in a way other than ice cream or pudding or yogurt or anything smooth and creamy like that. If you're craving chips, that is an indication that you are pissed off. You are angry. You are frustrated at something. And you've got to get in touch with what situation or who are you frustrated with. And then filling kind of bulky foods, and that's like, you know, bread, pasta, cake, muffins, all that kind of stuff. That is related to loneliness or emptiness. So if that's what you're craving, you ask yourself, okay, how am I lonely? How am I feeling empty in my life? And you address that underlying need.
And what are nuts? If you're craving like nuts, like almonds,
crunchy.
And pistachios.
Yeah, crunchy.
Anger? That's
anger.
The anger?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. And then where do we find this food formula mood thing that you've created? Where can we find that?
Well, I do talk about it a lot here, and I'm currently writing a book all about it, not just the psychology of it, but also kind of dispelling some of the myths about the physiology of it. So hopefully you'll be able to find it in about 6 months. I'm
okay,
writing
awesome.
As
yeah,
fast
I've
as I can.
I know I've heard you talk about it before on the show, but I guess we'll have to wait for your book.
Yes, and hopefully soon. But if you have any question, call me, ask me. And then, as I recall, you know, last week you said that you couldn't stop eating at that really yummy Greek restaurant. So the food mood formula is when you have like a craving, but when you can't stop eating. And as I told you, it was probably because you're not eating, yummy enough food. So when you had yummy food, you couldn't stop, right? So the food mood formula is not, it's not like, oh, you had dinner and now you're having ice cream for dessert and that means you really need comfort. It's more when you have those cravings, right?
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have such good memory, Dr. Nina. I love it.
Well, it was only last week, Nicole. I remember.
I know. Okay.
So,
I sent my mom there and she had the same experience. She was saying the food was so good and she like overate too. So I'm glad that I wasn't the only one, but maybe it means we all have like a problem in my family.
Sounds like your mom may also be too restricted in what she's eating. And maybe, you know, people are always telling me they're being good, and being good generally translates to I ate rabbit food that was not delicious.
Yep.
So if you're going to eat it, make sure it's delicious. And then
you hit the nail on the head. That's where I get it from my mom, and she's super restrictive. So I guess it's the same kind of thing. I will pass the info along. I actually downloaded this app on her phone, and she's been listening to your show here and there. I don't know if she's in now, but I will tell her about it.
Okay. Hey, Nicole's mom, listen to Nicole and to me. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for your call and always asking great questions that I know a lot of people can relate to.
Thank you. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye for now.
Okay.
Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hello. How are you, Dr. Nina?
I'm fine. Thanks. What's your name?
Janae.
Hi, Janae.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing This is Janae, who I actually met at an event last night, and and you said you were going to call, and you are calling. You are a woman of your word.
Yes, I was so excited to be on with you today, and I was just listening to a little bit of the show. That's the first time I've listened to the show, and it was very interesting to hear some of the things that you were talking about. So one thing that you mentioned to me last night in our conversation is trying to figure out why, you know, you're turning to food. As I mentioned to you, I kind of feel like I'm just being greedy. I eat food because I like it, you know?
Oh, yes.
But you were saying that there's kind of more to it than that, and to try to get to the root of why you're actually eating the food. So what you told one caller was very interesting to me, that it really depends on the things that you are eating, right? You know, that kind of dictate why you're turning to food.
Right.
Right. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So for you guys on Instagram, Janine is saying, we had a conversation when I met her last night. She said she just thinks that she's greedy and she likes food too much. Not true, Janine. And she's saying, so I'm not. And so Janine and everyone out there, I want you to know, it is, you know, the problem is not food. The problem is what's going on inside you that you're using food to resolve. So if you're turning to food to resolve something internal, which you may or may not be aware of, you know, if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else. And when you stop accusing yourself of being greedy, then you can, and you start getting curious and not critical. Janae, greedy is critical. Don't call yourself greedy. Sorry, Janae. I called you Janine. I didn't mean to do that. I have no idea why I did that. Janae, yes, you are not greedy. When you say that, then you know what? You feel bad. And when you feel bad, you're a lot more likely to use food to get away from your own mean voice.
Yes, that's exactly what I do. As I'm eating, I'll say, you know, you shouldn't be eating this, and that's why you're fat, or that's why you're, you know, it's things like that. But then I will continue to eat it anyway. Well, so it is a cycle.
Janae, you are, this is so perfect because, okay, so you guys, what she just said was, while she's eating it, she'll say things like, you shouldn't be eating this, and this is why you're fat, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, kind of mean. So what are you doing? Janae, you're using the second person to talk to yourself. Say that again, but say it with an I. This is why I'm doing this. This is why I. Say it. Try to say it.
Yeah. So why am I eating this? Why am I consuming more than I know I should consume?
Now, what's the difference?
Yeah, that's a little different. It's very different to say that.
So when you talk to yourself in second person and you're like, you're greedy and you're this and you're that, and mean girl voice.
Oh, my God.
Feel bad. So try not to talk to yourself in second person. Just every time.
Not to be mean to myself, okay.
And try, don't say you, say I. Because if you can even just now, you just switched it to I, and the tone of voice was totally different.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's interesting.
You kind of went from, you have no willpower. You have no willpower. This is why you're fat. You shouldn't be eating this. To, well, I need to understand why I'm eating foods that I should not be consuming. Like, it was like a different person.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty insightful. Okay, I'm definitely going to try that going forward. Talk to myself in first person, in a more loving manner. Yeah, I think you can't talk down to yourself in first person as easily as from the outside looking in, you know, talking to yourself in second person. I like that.
Exactly.
And then what were you saying about the types of food? Because I know that sugar is one of, you know, like millions of people who are addicted to sugar, but it's more so, you know, like the comfort kind of food, like, you know, a burger or fries. I love French fries, or, you know, things like that. So you kind of broke it down to the different kinds of things you're craving, meaning different things.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was just talking to Nicole about. And by the way, this sugar addiction thing, I'm going to do a whole other show on sugar addiction.
That's a whole other show.
It's a whole other show, but many people believe they're addicted to the substance of sugar, but you know, no, they're not. They're addicted to eating foods with sugar as a way of resolving something psychological. But like I say, that is a whole other show.
Okay.
But burgers and fries are in the filling category. And the filling category is associated with either loneliness or some kind of internal emptiness. If that's your thing, then you want to look at, well, is there something in your life that, is there a hole in your life? Is there some kind of empty space in your life that you may be filling symbolically with burgers and fries? Or the other reason people turn to those kinds of foods is when they don't eat enough during the day. This is the physiological part of it. If you don't eat enough during the day, someone just the other day was like, I don't know, I lose control, I have no control, I have no willpower because I'm perfect during the day. I eat my, you know, 12-grain bread with this, and my black coffee, and then for lunch I have a salad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with no bread, and, you know, and then I don't know what happens on my way home from work. I just can't stay out of that drive-thru. And I'm like, girl, you are hungry. You're starving. You're not eating enough.
Yeah.
So that's the other reason why people kind of may turn to junk food. Like, first you rule out the physiological reason, which is you might be just darn hungry. And then you also want to look at the psychological reason.
Okay. That's very, very interesting. And I think I could definitely benefit from taking a step back and looking at both of those aspects, you know, because they do both make a lot of sense. And like you say, it's kind of like when you're dieting, which we don't like that word anymore.
We don't like that word.
But
diet.
When you are on a certain eating regimen, you know, that, and you feel like you're doing so good, and then you get that first bite of something that you couldn't have on that regimen, you know, and you go bananas because your brain is like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing I've had since, you know, 2010 when you started eating this way. And then you just go off the deep end. So I know that there is an element of that because I'll do good for so long and I'm so proud of myself. And then I reward myself with something that I couldn't have, and then it's all over.
So,
you know, so the deprivation thing just doesn't work well.
Yeah, I want to just share with the Instagram folks what you were saying, which is she corrected herself and said diet, and then she corrected herself and used a euphemism that really means diet. So she's saying, like, when she's on a diet and for a long time, and then she does so well, and she's really proud of herself, and then she goes off of it, and then she can't get enough of the thing that because she hasn't had it since 2010, and it's so good. And this is exactly the reason why diets don't work, or one of the reasons, because deprivation leads to binge eating. If you tell yourself, I can't eat that, whatever that is, and then you don't eat it for months or weeks or days or hours or whatever, and you feel deprived, that's what you've got on your brain. If you say, I can't eat burgers, you know, I can't eat burgers, and you go through a month of not eating burgers, the deprivation of eating burgers will make you only want more and more burgers. But if you tell yourself, hey, you know what? Being good does not actually mean not eating a burger. Being good is not like depriving yourself. And you say, I can have a burger every single day if I want it. Then you can decide, A, if you want it, and B, if you have it, how much you're going to have it. Because if you say you can't have it, then you just can't stop eating it because you're not going to be able to have this until 2020.
Right. Right. Yes. I can totally see that. It is the mind is very powerful in anything that you tell a human being they cannot do, they're going to want to do exactly that.
Right.
So, I do want to learn how to, in moderation, because I do also believe that everything in moderation is fine. I've seen evidence of that, you know, so I do want to learn how to do things in moderation so that I'm not depriving myself for long periods of time.
Well,
and then subsequently binging out on it and then talking to myself in the third person, you know, like a mean girl. It's a vicious cycle.
Right. Well, so keep listening to the show. Keep calling the show. I will help you. I will help you do that.
I will absolutely look forward to Wednesdays calling into your show.
Wonderful. Yay, Janae.
Yay.
Thank you.
I hope you have a great day. You've helped me so much today, and I'm going to call you with a progress report next week and see how it's going.
Awesome. I look forward to hearing it. Have a great
week. Thank you, Dr. Nina. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, such great questions. Yes, I met Janae last night at an event. We ended up talking about diets. I said, never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spelled die, which really says it all, right? You know, diets kill your spirit. They kill your intuitive eating. They kill your relationship to yourself. And diets make you gain weight in the long run. For my book, the one that I hope is going to be out in 6 months, I did a lot of research into the long-term effects of dieting, and diets cause weight gain in the long run, and it's just that the science on it is really, really startling, and I think you're going to be surprised. And if you're still thinking that you need to be on a diet, you're going to be very convinced that you should not be. Okay, so great callers. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, callers. So I just want to go back to this fear of trusting people, because remember, when you can trust people, you turn to them instead of to food. A lot of people are like, I don't want to burden my friends. I don't want to be too much for my friends. I don't want to be a whiner. I don't want to depend on my friends. Well, you know what? We are relational people. We're here to depend on each other. We need mutuality. And the more that you can learn that you can depend on your friends can depend on you, the right friendships, that is so important, the more you'll be able to use friends for comfort or talk to yourself in a friend voice. So often, right, we're one way to ourselves and another way to our friends. I don't think that if one of Janae's friends said, oh my God, I had a burger, shouldn't have had it, I don't think Janae would say, you are so greedy. I don't think so. She said it to herself, but I don't think she'd say it to anybody else on the planet. So we got to talk to ourselves the way we talk to our friends, assuming that we're nice to our friends, which I'm going to assume that you are. Okay, so Dr. Hansen says, you know, we have so many fears about other people, that other people are going to get mad at us. We have fear about public speaking, about being vulnerable, about talking with authority figures, wondering what other people are going to think of you, whether they're going to judge your body, just being around people who aren't like you. There are so many anxieties. And sometimes those fears are justified. Some people actually do want to hurt you. It's true. Unfortunate, but true. Some people want your job. Some people want to undermine you. Some people are cheating on you or just doing something nasty. Those people are out there, but luckily there's not that many of them. Usually our fears about other people are actually not justified. Other people can probably care less about the fact that we use that word instead of the word we should have used, or, you know, didn't put a comma in our text, or they're not thinking about what we look like, because as Dr. Hansen reminds us, we are usually a bit player in their own personal drama. We're background artists in their movie. So if they do care, it's usually a very passing feeling. They're not going to be preoccupied. Oh my God, I can't believe she said that or wore that color or spoke up in that way. How inappropriate. They're not going to just stay with that feeling, you know, and hold it against you. And this is the important thing, even if the other person does judge you, guess what? You can handle it. You can handle it. If there's something that you've got to deal with, some conflict, some issue, some betrayal, some uncomfortable something, you can be straightforward, confident, and secure. You can make your way through it. You are not going to be undone by it. It's not going to crush you. Think about all the things you've been through in your life that you've overcome. Someone having a bad thought about you, you can overcome that. You can. So even if the worst is true, not to worry. But anxiety really just clouds our thinking. Anxiety creates suffering. And it's just anxiety about people. Social anxiety is just so detrimental. So there are, Dr. Hansen says there are two kinds of mistakes we make around other people and anxiety. And one is having too little anxiety. That's not a lot of people have too little anxiety. And one is having too much anxiety. That's probably the one more people can relate to. So anxiety about, too much anxiety about every little thing really makes our lives traumatic. So you've got to be mindful of maybe how anxious you even are. Some people who are anxious, they're so used to being anxious, they don't even know they're anxious. Only when they stop being anxious do they realize, oh my gosh, I was living that way for so long. I was in a constant state of anxiety and apprehension and nervousness about how other people were going to think about me. When that's gone, you realize, wow, that was harsh. So he says, tune into your body. You know, recognize when you have that like kind of funny feeling in the pit of your stomach or your heart rate goes a little faster. Watch the thoughts that go through your mind. Those thoughts in the back of your mind that overestimate threats and underestimate resources. Very good point. We tend to overestimate the threats and the criticism and the problems and underestimate the resources we have to be liked, first of all, and understood, and also, even if the worst is happening, to resolve it. He says, be aware of the cost to you of unnecessary anxiety. It's not useful. It's not valuable. It's painful. It causes suffering, makes you feel bad, makes you hold back with other people, hold back your truth, makes you go to war with yourself and your body as a distraction. So you want to be free of this fear, right? So when you're with someone who you know cares about you, how am I doing on time? Well, not much time. Try saying to yourself, this person is not going to attack me. I know this person is not going to attack me. I know this person likes me. I know this person loves me. Just have it really ring true in your head and in your heart. And then say, and even if you did hurt me, I would be okay. That doesn't change my lovability. That doesn't change who I am. I'm still okay in my core. So what is he suggesting? He's suggesting a new way of relating to yourself, a new way of talking to yourself, a new way of letting in that you're likable and lovable. So it's about recognizing situations as they truly are, and then the next time you're in an anxiety-producing situation, kind of check in with yourself. Wait a minute. I feel like someone is going to attack me. I feel like this person doesn't like me. By the way, these feelings are really thoughts. I'm thinking this person doesn't like me, but how true is it? What evidence do I have for that? This is just a fear, false evidence appearing real. And remember, what's really going on here? Is this person judging me, or am I just afraid that that person will judge me? And that way you can be more in the moment. And being in the moment is a real comfort and a relief because it helps you get clear of that kind of awful anxiety. The other thing, which I've talked about on the show before, and I'm sure I will talk about it again, is to be an observer. When you feel like you're being observed, there's this huge light bulb over your head and you're illuminated and everyone's looking at you and you're like, no. So you're being under observation and you're scrutinized. But when you're the observer, that big light goes on to other people. And instead of eyes on you, it's your eyes out. What do you think? What do you think of them? Not what do they think of me. What do you think of them? What do I think of them? What do I think of my world? Not what does the world think of me? When you are an observer instead of being observed, you're going to feel a whole heck of a lot better. I promise you that. Practice makes progress. We'll talk more about it. Thank you so much for joining me today here on the Dr. Nina Show, here on LA Talk Radio. I am so happy to spend this hour with you. And if you would like more food for thought, please check out my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com. And follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc. See you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.